For KOSU, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time for This Week in Oklahoma Politics with Republican political consultant Neva Hill and ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel. Well, state lawmakers are fast-tracking a budget bill through in the hopes of getting out signing die by Friday afternoon. Neva, what are your thoughts on this budget agreement?
Well, we're back where we always are in the final hours in any legislative session, no matter what we say or what we attempt. It gets down to those last hours and the give and take. This has been fascinating. I mean, when you look at how we got to where we are to finish up this session, I mean, the bill in the House passed 54-42. It took till 11:20 Wednesday night to get it done, and frankly, they had to sequester the House members, the Republicans, and start calling them out basically one by one. It was one of those rare moments where you actually had Senate leadership and House leadership working these folks, trying to make sure that they had enough votes that they could count on to get this deal done. So, I think that the long and the short is that the deal that was constructed by the leadership holds. It's probably the best that they could do. There's certainly a lot of grousing still among some of the Republicans, but by and large, given where they were and given this deep hole that they have in terms of the shortfall, no one was going to be completely happy. So I think you have to say, looking at it across the board, everyone could slice and dice it and have preferences. But they've done, the best that they can given what they're dealing with.
Ryan, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, we can divide this up into process and substance. The process here, as Neva said, is, kind of deja vu all over again, right? I mean, we see this every year. It comes down to the last few days of the legislative session. And if there is anything different this year, it's that we've created this artificial deadline. The deadline isn't today. Friday. The deadline is next Friday. Mm-hmm. And so we've created this artificial deadline. The overwhelming majority of lawmakers have seen this budget for hours, not days, hours. And they're voting on a $7 billion budget with hours to study it. And even just a quick glimpse of the budget has a lot of troubling things about it that I think lawmakers have legitimate questions about, but they don't get that chance to weigh in. I think more importantly, the people of Oklahoma, the people that they represent, aren't really having an opportunity to weigh in. And so the House created this artificial deadline. They had a rule suspension motion earlier this week to make sure that they could have the vote done and a budget passed by a week early. And lawmakers could go home over the Memorial weekend and stay home. I think that one of the reasons that they are doing that is, just like Neva said, there was a lot of difficulty even getting the votes necessary to pass this. I think it was stuck on 47, 46 votes for an hour and a half last night, and they were twisting arms and finally got it over that 51 number and were able to pass it. But I think that if legislators went home over the Memorial weekend and they heard from county commissioners who were telling them that they were losing over $50 million in roads and bridges funding, if they heard from health departments that were saying that they were, and rural hospitals saying that they might have to shut doors, teachers and superintendents, looking at a standstill budget that leaves them with class shortages or teacher shortages and larger class sizes, Corporation Commission in the wake of, we're in the middle of one of the largest ongoing natural disasters in our state's history with earthquake surges, and the likelihood for it to get worse is in the future, but we're cutting Corporation Commission money, and we've got revolving fund dollars, one-time revenue of over $500 million plugging the $600 million shortfall. And what that tells us is that next year is going to be even worse. I mean, I think that we're at a point where we're seeing lots of state services decimated, and nobody is really having an opportunity to weigh in on this. And so they had to rush this through because I think that if they had gone home over the Memorial weekend, come back Tuesday, if they thought they had difficulty getting the votes this week, I think it would have been impossible to get votes on the budget.
Well,
this,
but by the same token, I would disagree with you to this extent, Ryan, on these folks not having input. They do have input. They have input all through the session. They knew they had a $611 million shortfall. They knew that every agency was on the chopping block or, was going to be held harmless. Everyone was advocating through this whole committee process and through all of the give and take. All of the special interest groups were out there. And frankly, when you look at the bottom line where they shielded Common Ed, so 51 cents of every dollar is still going into appropriated toward education. When you look at the fact that they preserve the funding necessary for the 8-year transportation plan, as well as the 5-year county road and bridge plan. I mean, you know, yes, everybody wants more money, but they held harmless areas where they knew they had to do additional funding. They funded the Pinnacle plan. They had more money going to corrections and places where there was definitely the need. And so, you know, I think when you look at it across the board, I think what this says is they've done what they needed to do in their estimation this year. But you're right, next year it's a more slippery slope because they may have a bigger number to deal with, and it's an election year, and we know what kind of an impasse that provides.
And so, over $500 million of these dollars won't be there next year, and that's, you know, I think that's a big question for these lawmakers to answer to is, how is it that we can look at this budget and pretend that it's responsible in any way? I mean, I know that we can say that we held education harmless. I think that what we can really say is that we pushed the pause button on the harm that education's already incurring, and I think that that's the same across the board.
When you have a $7 billion budget, though, and you only have $74 million in cuts, I mean, you've not done anything very dramatic in terms of dealing with reining in, right-sizing, whatever terminology you want to use, a government, and that process, I think, is where the lawmakers are going to have to be much more strategic in dealing with these agencies. It's like capturing these revolving funds. Yes, I mean, if they're sitting there with millions of dollars, sure, they don't want to give them up. But yes, you have to go get them and use them more judiciously to accommodate the overall picture of what the budget looks like and what the future forecast is. So I think, you know, I think the gamesmanship has gotten tougher. I mean, all of these groups that heretofore could come in at the last hour and kind of slip something in or take something out of a bill and somehow get their folks taken care of really well, those days I think are much fewer and far between, and they should be.
And I think that if we look at the revolving fund, you know, we can say that cuts were held to around $70 million, but if we look at these one-time revenue streams that add up to over $500 million, I think that a more accurate portrayal is $500 million in cuts, maybe not this year but next year, because that's the direction that we're heading. And the other part, I think that a lot of these agency heads were surprised by the fact that their revolving funds and their budgets were decimated to the point that they were. I mean, tourism is virtually non-existent. Ethics Commission, I'm hoping there's a good explanation for this, but Ethics Commission took a 40% plus hit. The Auditor Inspector's
Office
took a...
I think some of those percentages, though, they're playing smoke and mirrors with those percentages. I mean, even the Labor Commissioner, Mark Costello, came out and said, oh, let me be clear. I mean, we're not getting this 33% shift in our budget. I mean, it's how the numbers play out in terms of what they had taken away in their revolving funds, other unencumbered funds. And so, again, I think that's the problem. Everybody's looking at all of these budgets kind of piecemeal and not getting a true reflection of the overall. And it's no different than the federal budget.
But that's part of
these lawmakers have to, you know, have to divide the pie, and then it's incumbent upon these agencies and on down the line to be able to efficiently use the money. And everyone just coming back year after year and saying, we had a standstill budget, or we didn't get more when we needed more. I don't care if it's higher ed, common ed, corrections, DHS. It doesn't matter. There's never going to be enough money there. And I think what these lawmakers are really having to be forced to address is it's time to look at the long-term view, not just piecemeal every budget every year and not really get any forward progress
out
of it.
But I do have to actually ask, because in the Oklahoman on Thursday morning, there was a story that the two agencies that are not getting cuts are the House and the Senate. In fact, the House is getting an extra $1 million.
And it sends a very poor message to the voters back home. If you talk about going back home and being accountable, yeah, I think that would raise eyebrows just about any coffee shop in all 77 counties if you were asking the folks, do you think that's a good deal? So, you know, again, those are one of those matters where they figure most people aren't paying much attention, or somehow they can explain it away. But I think you lead by example, and so that may be something they want to look at next year.
And part of the problem with rushing a budget through like this is that these agency heads that are now seeing where these cuts are coming from, and associations and different organizations out there that are realizing the pain from these cuts, they're trying to speak up, but their voices are virtually unheard at this point because of this expedited process. And, you know, it would be nice if we had this weekend and next week to answer a lot of these questions. I think there's some question out there as to whether or not all of these dollars are actually in these revolving funds. We're seeing that we're going to take a couple of million here from one revolving fund, but you know, is the money actually there? Can we anticipate that the money will actually materialize at some point in the next fiscal year? These are legitimate questions, and no one's being able to ask those questions. You know,
they've been addressing the revolving fund all through session. I mean, they've been looking at the numbers, and I think you'd have to say
when you
that
say
they're
they,
not.
It's really a small group of people. I mean, we're talking about representatives from House leadership, usually the Speaker or someone designated by the Speaker, the pro temp, and somebody from the governor's office, and Preston Dorflinger. And those are, you know, we're the number of people that were actually in the know as to what these numbers were going to be whenever we saw them earlier this week were, I could count them on one hand. And you know, so the overwhelming number of lawmakers in the House and the Senate and these agency heads, I think that everybody's been caught off guard, and there are a lot of unanswered questions. And what we're seeing is haste to pass a budget that is wildly unbalanced, that leaves a huge liability for the next fiscal year in a political year without these one-time funds. And one of the problems that we're seeing is, you know, these every year we see these cuts, and then you hear questions about, well, we saw these cuts and the sky didn't fall. And I think that, you know, agencies have been very good at masking the harm that's happening here. And what we need are agency heads to really speak out and say, you know, this is what we cannot do with these money. The auditor inspector's office, you know, the people that are safeguarding the efficacy of how our tax dollars are spent on our behalf, their ability to do that has been cut. The ability for the oil and gas industry to be able to send inspectors out, not just to protect the environment, but to help expedite oil and gas drilling and provide permits, you know, that's going to be impaired here. And all of these harms that will result as a result of this unbalanced budget now and in the future really need to be highlighted by these agencies, because if the general public in Oklahoma continues to go along with this conventional wisdom that we can make these cuts and not have any impact as a result of it, then we're not ever going to have those hard conversations and difficult decisions.
But I think with these
the
agencies, what we have to see is the accountability of when they get their budget. Then if they believe that there are certain things that absolutely are have-to elements of their budget, fund those and see where they can make streamline and create more efficiencies in their own operation. And I think that's what gets lost in this dialogue. It is, we always have this final hard deadline that everyone has to reach. Whether they came back next week or not is really immaterial. I mean, I think it is a reflection of finally getting something crafted that everyone, yes, whether they get 5 days or 5 weeks to jawbone around it and come up with all of the, you know, all of the pot shots that they can take on it, ultimately comes down to a vote. And these are hard. It's pretty clear that these folks, many of them, have difficulty finally making that, pushing that button which way they want to go on this. But that's what they're there for. And so hopefully out of this process, we see something better materialize for next year, where they don't continue to talk about, you know, correcting the methodology, but they actually get it better into the process of doing it.
I'm not optimistic that's going to happen.
Well,
I think it's happened whether it was Republicans or Democrats. Do want to move on here. The Attorney General is facing some tough questions after going before the U.S. Supreme Court with a heavily redacted letter he said they received from a Texas pharmacy concerning the drug pentobarbital. An unredacted version of the letter finds it was sent to the Texas Department of Corrections, not the AG. Ryan, what do you think about this news?
This is incredibly troubling. This is the state of Oklahoma representing facts and important evidence in a case with grave consequences, not only for Oklahoma but for the nation. They're representing facts to the highest court in our country, and they're doing so in a way that is very sloppy with the truth. I don't want to say that they intentionally deceived the court, because I don't have any evidence of intent to do that. But the kind of sloppiness and playing fast and loose with the truth here is simply unacceptable whenever you're going to be representing before any court. I mean, I don't care whether you're in Seminole County or you're walking up the steps in Washington, D.C. before the United States Supreme Court. You simply do not do that. It's unacceptable. And for it to take 3 weeks for him to come clean and say, oh, this is what really happened, is just really unfortunate. And I think it's a blight on the Attorney General's office here in Oklahoma. And it reflects poorly upon all of our state. There is a correlation there between what we're seeing with how sloppy and fast and loose they were with their brief writing here and the state's haste to move forward with executions. This idea that we're gonna move forward with these executions, hell or high water, I think has put us in this position to begin with, where you're just throwing things at the wall and seeing what will stick, and that's really not the way that you practice law, especially when the consequences are as big and significant as they are in capital cases.
Neva.
Oh, well, I think definitely. I mean, it is something that we need to get all the facts out, and it does need to it does need to come to light that. Whoever is responsible, that needs to be made clear. And regardless, I mean, the Attorney General and his office, I mean, they have taken a black eye. And it's regrettable, but it's something that if this is a pattern or if they have issues that this is one of many or some or the only one, I think that's what they've got to get down to really unearthing and figuring out. And, you're right. I mean, no one wants to see the highest a person in the state of Oklahoma in terms of legal responsibility, having their office discredited or come under this kind of scrutiny. And regrettably, much of this was drawn by national published reports as well as published reports here in the state. So that just adds fuel to the fire in terms of trying to get this resolved.
The Attorney General is also in the news for his battle with Auditor Gary Jones over an investigation in the Tar Creek Superfund site. The AG is telling the auditor not to release his findings on a cleanup where the job didn't go to the lowest bidder because there's no evidence of criminal wrongdoing. But Jones says there is. Neva, should we be concerned about this?
Well, I mean, I think this is one of these issues that has gone on and on and on. I mean, even Drew Edmondson, when he was Attorney General, was dealing with the same set of issues surrounding this particular trust and the Tar Creek Superfund site and all of the things surrounding it. So I think there is some there clearly are questions here. And I think when you've got the Attorney General and the state auditor at loggerheads and both coming up with totally different points of view of what the facts are, I think it makes anyone in the public and certainly in my mind question the veracity of all of it and want to know really let's get down to what the true facts are. So, someone may be able to sort it out a little better at this point than I have, but it is certainly something that has been very convoluted, and I think there are more questions than answers right now.
Ryan.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I tried to search and I wasn't able to find any authority that the Attorney General would have to order or compel the auditor and inspector not to release these records.
Right.
Frankly, the Attorney General says that what he doesn't want to do is to release unsubstantiated allegations of criminal wrongdoing against private individuals. And I think that the auditor and inspector's response to that is appropriate. He said, well, first of all, we're talking about private individuals here. These are people that are entrusted to act on behalf of the people of Oklahoma. And we're talking about contractors that are dealing with the state of Oklahoma and our tax dollars. You know, this is very well within the authority of the auditor and inspector to look into this.
Contractors, trust development members, and even elected officials, a mayor, I think, has been mentioned.
This is why we have the position of auditor and inspector is to ensure that we're protecting our tax dollars.
Yeah.
From either criminal or even negligent.
And what Auditor Jones said he was going to run on, too. He said he wasn't going to care about whether or not Republicans or Democrats. Mm-hmm. Auditor Jones says, I'm going to uncover mm-hmm. everything.
And I think that that's, the auditor said, he came back and he said, well, what do you mean unsubstantiated? You know, in addition to not private persons, what do you mean unsubstantiated? We've been conducting this investigation right. for years. We have a lot of substantial evidence for what we presented to your office. Now, it's totally within the purview of the Attorney General's office to say, we're going to exercise prosecutorial discretion and not bring criminal charges here. But at the end of the day, if the auditor and inspector wants to release his records, as I think that he should, then the people of Oklahoma are entitled to know what his findings were. And maybe even if the AG doesn't want to do that, maybe some individuals wanted to petition for a grand jury. That's one of our rights as the people of Oklahoma. We can petition for grand jury. We're seeing that in Tulsa with the sheriff right now. I think the Attorney General has confused a grand jury with this auditor and inspector investigation. If he really wanted to conduct an investigation where it was kept secret, for good reason, right, to protect the identity of individuals and to protect the efficacy of the investigation process itself, then you impanel a grand jury and you do that. Mm-hmm. Then you don't go to the auditor and inspector and say, do this on behalf of the people of Oklahoma, create a paper trail and report back to me.
And Ryan and Eva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.